Today's show is brought to you by the 100% electric Nissan Leaf, Ireland's best-selling electric car that could save your family thousands every year. Visit evsavings.ie to see how much you can save by switching to 100% electric Nissan Leaf today. Nissan, innovation that excites.
You only get tested maybe at this level once in 4 years, you know what I mean? You got a balls to kick them.
So England in possession, and had much of this ball.
And it kicks it away again!
Toby Flood.
Don't sink!
This is not soccer. This is not soccer.
Because in either game, life or rugby, the margin for error is so small.
Hello and welcome to a special Irish Examiner Rugby World Cup podcast in association with Nissan. Two Irish rugby legends with me today, Donal Lenehan and Ronan O'Gara. They're like ships passing in the night. Ronan O'Gara is home for a brief visit. Donal Lenehan has his suitcase packed here beside him and he's heading off to Japan in the morning. We said we'd take a quick opportunity, lads, to get you to sit down. Donal, in Friday's Rugby World Cup magazine, which we are producing for the Irish Examiner, you seem to be indicating that the opening weekend game between the Springboks and the All Blacks, we may actually be revisiting it for the World Cup final. Is that how you see it?
Yeah, I think there's every possibility that that'll happen. It's an incredible game to open the World Cup weekend, New Zealand, South Africa. I think there are five World Cups between them. South Africa, probably the most improved international side over the course of the last 18 months. So it's a fascinating contest. You wonder how both camps will approach it, and Raj will be able to give us a better insight into New Zealand, having just come back from there over the past few months. But yeah, looking at the way the permutations go, you know, we're all talking our pool about, you know, if Ireland come first, is it South Africa or New Zealand they're playing? Given the way things have progressed over the past 12 months, I'm not so sure there's a massive difference between who you'd want to play at this stage. Yeah. And looking at the way the draw will pan out, there's every possibility that New Zealand and South Africa could not only open the tournament, but they could close it on the 2nd of November.
Because the perception seems to be that New Zealand have dropped a little, Rog, and South Africa are on the rise. Have New Zealand, are they 5 or 10% off where they were maybe 18 months ago?
I would say probably more when they were off 18 months ago. I think they definitely had a decline, but I think there has been a little bit of a resurgence, and I think what the massive advantage they have over any other nation is they know how to time their run for World Cups. Mm-hmm. They're experts in that over the last two campaigns, obviously, and this would be historic if they were to win it for three times in a row. So they have the big advantage of that, I think. Having spent time down there, they put such value on the process and on the kind of enjoyment factor in getting the week right in preparation. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes, even when there is so much so-called pressure around. These guys, if a Super Rugby is anything to go by, their preparation is fascinating, and the fact that even 3 hours before games, they're as chilled and as relaxed as it could be. And then the minute they kind of cross the whitewash, everything changes. But that's down to, I suppose, a really trusted mental preparation.
Mm. If New Zealand, Raj, were to actually lose tomorrow to South Africa, how much, though, does that ratchet up the pressure on the group? Or are they still, as you say, comfortable enough that they'll travel the road that they're taking?
Yeah, I think so. And as Donald said, I think South Africa and New Zealand know that they have a quarter final. Mm. And whether it's Ireland or Scotland or Japan, from their point of view, that's the game that they're going to really focus on. I don't think, as Donald said, is there much of a difference for New Zealand to play Scotland or is it to play Ireland in their quarter final, or South Africa to play Ireland or Scotland.
Sure.
So sure. I think what they do is that they concentrate on themselves.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing, though, is if New Zealand, for argument's sake, if they lost to South Africa tomorrow, they'll go down a route that could put them head-to-head with New Zealand or with England in a quarter-final, which would be...
In a semi-final, which would
be pretty interesting. Now, I don't think New Zealand would be quaking in their boots at that prospect. Mm. And that's the thing about New Zealand. You know, having watched them during the summer or the winter as it was down there, that they got spanked by Australia one Saturday, turned it around the following week, as they generally do. The South African game, I thought, in Wellington was a really interesting game, and that New Zealand, they were on the back foot in terms of the defensive intensity that South Africa brought to that game. But I think New Zealand, having had experiences like that, and they don't get them too often, they generally learn from them. And so I think it'll be interesting to see tomorrow how they react to the type of defensive pressure that South Africa had managed to put on them during the Rugby Championship. You rarely see New Zealand falling into the same trap too often.
Let's forget the actual world rankings for the moment, you know, which of Ireland had won.
Waste of time.
New Zealand are, everybody's saying New Zealand are number one. But Donald, who is number two in the tournament for you?
Well, South Africa, I think.
More than England?
Yeah, definitely. Given the way they're playing at the moment. England, like, you go back to the Six Nations. In fact, I was only kind of looking through that England-Scotland game in the Six Nations. If you remember, England were 30 points up at one stage. Sure. They ended up scraping a draw at the end. England, looking at them in the warm-up games, they look incredibly powerful. To be fair to Eddie Jones, I think he has them hitting their peak at the right time. But for me, the question mark with England isn't so much their physical prowess. It's what happens in a tight game when the mental pressure comes on. That's what happened in the Six Nations. We've seen numerous examples in the past where they haven't been able to cope with that. So that question mark is still there in my mind. Mm. If it was a physical battle, then I'd fancy England against anyone. I mean, Maro Itoje, Cruz in the second row, Billy Vunipola is almost unplayable. The problem for England, the issues they've had over the past 2-3 years, they haven't, certainly Billy Vunipola and Manu Tuilagi haven't been on the team at the same time. And it gives them so many options and pressure defensively, and Raju, as a defence coach, will appreciate that there's so many people that you have to target in terms of your defence, that it creates so much opportunities for other people on your team.
Yeah, it's just interesting, Dawn's point. I think we even saw that in the World Cup and other so-called warm-ups. But England doing a number comprehensively in Ireland and Twickenham. Then their next game is in Newcastle on the Friday night.
Italy,
against
wasn't
Italy.
It?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's 6-0 after 45 minutes. And you just, Donald's point about that mental side, can they actually string it together when the pressure comes on? Like, I'd say it's such a big emphasis on beating Ireland, even though it was a weakened Irish team, we accept that. But then to go up against Italy, and they did struggle, I think, in a few aspects against
Italy.
And
they struggled against Wales in Cardiff. Wales beat them in Cardiff. Now, I know they had made changes to their side and all that, but last year it would have appeared that Eddie Jones had gone from the Ford Farrell axis in midfield. Now he seems to be back in that again. Mm. Slade was a huge influencer in there from 13 for them, but now Tuilagi is there. So they have options. No, they're good options to have, but it'll be interesting to see how they progress.
You, Raj, mentioned the mental side of things there, and I don't know why. Every time the mental and the psychology is mentioned in rugby terms, I always think of France. Because, you know, you just never know where they are, how brittle they are mentally, psychologically. Do they have the potential in the pool stage to take down England?
No. No, I don't think. Maybe Argentina, but I don't think England.
Why?
I just think England are too smart for them. You look at that game in terms of France have, I suppose, a few weaknesses, which... One jumps to mind straight away, the amount of kick space they left in their backfield in Twickenham. And England just brutally exploited that space and ridiculed France, and they just put up a cricket score against them.
Yeah.
I don't think they, with Lopez or Ntamack, I just don't think they have the general at 10 to dismantle a team with either Ford or Farrell, because for me, Ford is probably one of the most improved players in the world in the last 6 months, and Farrell is... I think hitting world class.
Explain to me and to those who are listening why, with the vastness of their pick, with the size of the country, how France continually can't seem to get, as you said, a general at 10. Why is that?
I think, yeah, it may be changing now. There's a few good young French players coming up, but like... anyone who understands Test rugby, you kind of, 0 to 5 caps are a blur, 5 to 10 you're starting to get a little bit of a groove, and then 10 to 20 you can try and hide a bit of form. But like, that's what happens. But should they change the half back position as frequently as they change the number 10 position? There's guys, you know, I mean, Rory Cockett would be going to the World Cup with anyone in the world, but he decided to declare for France and now he's out in the court. But he's an exceptional rugby player. So they have so much choice, but like, they're loaded in a lot of positions, but also I suppose their technical expertise in terms of a lot of the years in coaching in top 14, it's scrum, line out, maul, kick.
And they're only bringing 1 10 to Japan. Out and out 10.
Well, like, they have Ramos and they have Intermac, so in their regard they're 2 10s for Toulouse.
Yeah.
So
I've seen Ramos play Champions Cup rugby for Toulouse. If they're picking him at 10, they can forget it.
Really?
Absolutely. Yeah. But I thought I saw a couple of green shoots in some of the warm-up games with France in terms of they looked incredibly fit. They looked sharp. They looked stronger than I've seen them for a while. And I always felt with France, and you'd know this from top 14, when you see them playing in the November internationals, a lot of the time they look really sharp, really good. But then, whether it's the nature of the Pro 14 and the hard grind, by the time they get to the Six Nations, they're always hanging in. Mm. There's a lot of good young players in that French setup at the moment. And it strikes me that maybe, you know, they've been 2 or 3 months together. They look as if they're a happy bunch, as if there's a good atmosphere within their group. I just saw green shoots, as I say, in those warm-up games. I agree with Raj wholeheartedly. I don't see them beating England, but I wouldn't have seen them beating Argentina 6 months ago, whereas now I actually fancy them to come out of the pool ahead of Argentina. When I say I fancy them, that's based on what I've seen in warm-up games. The reality of what happens in tournament rugby is far different, so it'll be interesting to see if those little chinks of light that I thought I spotted will be carried into the tournament.
And they will be unrecognisable. There's a good buzz in the French squad. Players are impressed with Galtier. They've changed their kind of strength and conditioning coach. They are fitter. I think the training they've been doing with the ball and the drills and the exercise and their game plan, the feedback has been very positive. So they will be hugely removed from the France of the past. There is absolutely no doubt about that. And if there is a nation, be it in soccer or rugby, when momentum is with them, they are extremely dangerous, because the guys can play. You get the ball to Penno and he can win a game on his own. If Fofana is on a going day, he's really interesting. Up front, they have a few big units that will be fit. I think a lot of it comes down to actually buying into their game plan, because under Galtier, he's a really, I think, guys, you know, I mean, Juan Martin Hernandez has come out and said, he's the best coach that he's played under. So he's played under a lot of coaches, and he's an exceptional player. So I think from that point of view, they have a good opportunity to put their best foot forward, which in the past they hadn't, because there was they didn't believe in their coaches.
And just on that point, tomorrow, you know, you're talking about New Zealand, South Africa. 3 hours before that game, France play Argentina. So that's another one that people, you know, on the opening weekend, you have three tier one nations, or three matches where there are tier one teams playing, Ireland, Scotland being the third one.
Yeah.
So it's an incredible opening weekend from that point of view.
And would I be right, Donal, in actually suggesting the loser really of that France-Argentina game, given that the other big hitter is England, is really pretty much out?
Yeah, I would think so. As I say, I think England are strong enough to beat both those teams. So therefore, you're struggling. Like, I mean, there's the bonus point system and all that in the other games. But, you know, when you look at the other teams in that, USA and Tonga, I mean, they're going to get a tonking either way.
Right.
Even though you go back to 2011 and Tonga beat France in the World Cup, but haven't seen New Zealand put 94 under there last weekend.
The question, Raj, that I asked Donal earlier, we all agree New Zealand are one.
I don't know. For me, what big backline will New Zealand pick? There's 5 positions up for grabs that never in the history of the World Cup for New Zealand have they had such an unsettled.
Go on, fill us in.
Well, who will they play 10? Who will they play 12? Who will they play 13?
Well, it's not that they don't have options there. It's just
where
they play them.
But they have so much options, but sometimes, Donald says, when you hit that pressure moment, and you might only hit it twice in a World Cup campaign, you need to really have trust in the guy next to you. But like, Sevo Reese, for all his potential, hasn't been. This will be another step up for him. Can he handle it? I know from his character, George Bridge would be able to handle it, but will they pick him ahead of Ricky Ioane? Who will they play 15?
Who will they play 15?
Well, I presume they play Ben Smith, but...
Well, that's the interesting conundrum. We'll talk about that, but I just wanted to say, because you said New Zealand were... You said if New Zealand are number one, who are number two?
So are you saying now you are not picking New Zealand? Who is your number one?
I would say South Africa at this moment.
Really?
Yes.
Are you both saying that? So are you saying... Are you not giving your beloved All Blacks number one ranking in this World Cup?
Do I think they'll win it?
Yeah.
I'd have to see the New Zealand South Africa game.
That's interesting. Because,
well, it is. I mean, it's something that, like Raj will know intimately. New Zealand, I've never seen New Zealand going into a World Cup where, like, you've George Bridge and Sevu Reese, as he says, on the wings. You've the Richie Mo'unga, Beauden Barrett, 10, 15. They've been experimenting on that. You know, it's looked reasonably good in some games. I thought the opening game against South Africa, the one that they drew, Mo'unga struggled at 10 that day. It's a question then that if you're struggling, how many, and the opposition aren't kicking the ball to you, how much can Barrett influence the game from 15 as he could from 10? In other words, he'd have more possessions as a 10 than he would in a 15, and the opposition control that. Because the last thing you'd want to do is kick or play Beauden Barrett into the game from the back three.
Plus also too, I think people won't appreciate the difference in playing styles between the Northern and Southern Hemisphere teams. It's all out attack and Super Rugby, the Four Nations, because it was warm-up games before the World Cup, it was all out attack. South Africa's defence was good, but like New Zealand was at 48 points they conceded against Australia. For an England or an Irish or a Welsh team to do that against Australia is unheard of. There would be talk for fellas to lose their job as a result of that one scoreline alone. So,
but isn't that what makes this World Cup so much different? Like, certainly New Zealand were nailed on in 2011. In 2015, 2011, playing at home, they almost blew it. But that was the pressure, not having won it for so long. There is a mix of styles now. And there are so many Southern Hemisphere players that have come up and are playing in the Champions Cup. And all of a sudden you're looking at these fellas and you're saying, well, look, they're good, but they're not superstars.
Yeah. You know? You've said that.
Of course, and it only makes a good point too. Also, the fact that the surface and the stadia and the conditions are going to have a huge impact. If there's high humidity, dehydration, injuries, Eddie Jones for his finishers, people coming off the bench, it's going to be a 23-man game because even, as we know, like if Ireland are to go the distance, it's unrealistic that Sexton would probably play 80-80-80. It's unheard of even in the Six Nations. So like that puts a massive focus on who's going to drive that ship for Ireland. Then you're looking at, for the other teams, for New Zealand's point of view, how do they load their bench? England's point of view, I think it's a big force of theirs. A big strength. I'm using French words. Big force. A big strength of theirs. So South Africa have a settled team. Wales have a settled team, bar 10. But...
Well, no, you've led me beautifully on, because I was actually going to Donal bring up Warren Gatland and Wales. Again, strike me as the side you would least want to play if you had any sense of brittleness about your confidence in a World Cup. They strike me as a side that is mentally so robust.
Yeah, they're incredible, because when you look at the individuals that make, you know, they have a number of real quality players. You know, your Jonathan Davis, your Liam Williams, for me at fullback, I think is the best fullback in the world. George North is rediscovering form. But you look at their forwards. Alan Wynne-Jones apart, like there's no kind of superstar there. The back row, very good individual players, but they've lost the likes of Talupa Faletau and Sam Warburton over the last 18 months. Now, you fellas like Josh Navidi, who we've seen play Pro 14 rugby for the past number of years, he's a very good player. Is he good enough to be, like, you must have a dominant back row to win a World Cup? But that comes back for me to Gatland. I've always been an admirer of Gatland. He has always got more out of less. He creates the right environment. he has backed everything on the physicality of Wales and their fitness and their strength. And the one plus that they might have coming into this World Cup, their work rate is incredible. Defensively, they're so well organised. And Raj made the point about humidity and all that. There will be a lot of mistakes, a lot of handling mistakes. Mm. All of a sudden, the type of line pressure that they put on you in defence, that creates mistakes. Mm. Penalties come from that. They have Lee Halfpenny kicking. They have, like, Dan Biggar. Gareth Anscombe was sort of earmarked as their starting 10, but I've always been a fan of Dan Biggar, and I really love his mental toughness in terms of Anscombe was earmarked as the starting 10. He got injured in their first warm-up game against England. The following weekend, they played England in Cardiff. He was handed the number 10 jersey and was told, okay, make this position your own for the World Cup.
Biggar.
Biggar.
Yeah.
Now that Anscombe is gone, he gave a man-of-the-match performance. And now, whether he'll be good enough to lead them the whole way, I'm not so sure in that. Every World Cup that I have seen, the team that wins it have outstanding halfbacks. Mm. Gareth Davis at scrum half, I think he's a really good player as well. But I'm not so sure their forwards are going to be strong enough to compete against the really top teams. But they will be a horrible team to play against.
Raj, if I can just move it on, because we want to finish with the Ireland-Scotland issue. Australia, I mean, again, what a conundrum. They seem, again, to be getting their stuff back together. What kind of state are they going to Japan in?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think with Cheka, though, you can be damn sure they'll be good.
Mm.
Like, for him, if they don't reach a semi-final, it'll be an underachievement. The guy's a competitor, and I think he has about 20 really good players. I don't know if 31 really good players, but I think 20 of them, the Australian franchises are in dire straits. There's no buzz about Australian rugby union. It's struggling big time. Attendances are struggling, and Super Rugby model isn't in good shape. But then the national team has come back, and they did beat New Zealand, as Don said. Then New Zealand got their revenge, but that was all is going to happen, I think. So they have an awful lot of strike power. If they're accurate in their game, I think they're a handful for everyone, because the one thing you know from Australia is they'll always have a great amount of set plays, strike plays.
Mm.
But their problem is, can they get the backs get a platform from their front five? Their back row is brilliant, I find. They have a lot of, obviously, competition at nine. Everyone thought that Ginyu was a shoo-in. And now they have a big decision to make about who'll play nine for them.
Mm.
And possibly 10, in that Leo Lafana came into the side. Like, Bernard Foley has been their out half for the past 5, 6, 7 years. Now all of a sudden, Christian Leo Lafana, incredibly, he had leukemia, was out of rugby for a year, was sent up to Ulster to try and get back playing during the off-season, had a really good 5 months cameo in Ulster, went back to the Brumbies, played well, and all of a sudden he finds himself at the starting out half for Australia. Mm. It's an incredible story, but again, uncertainty as to who your best halfbacks are. I was in Australia last year for the three test series. I have to say, there is strike power in that back line, but they seem to, it's like a piece of chess. They keep on moving all the players around.
And not into the right spots always.
Yeah, well, like, you look at a fellow like Kirtley Beale. He's an unbelievable player. He can do fantastic things, but he's now nearly 30 and nobody knows what his best position is. The only thing, and Raj, I'd be interested in your view on this, they have revamped their midfield with Karevi and James O'Connor, the bad boy of Australian rugby, was banished for the 5, 6 years. He's now back in the fold. They put him in a 13, and from an attacking perspective, I thought they looked more dangerous with that midfield combination than they had earlier on in the tournaments.
Yeah, I was shocked when I saw it, because I had to double check, is that the same James O'Connor that I was down in Toulon? And it is, and he's been obviously given another chance, a big chance to resurrect his career and show what he can do on the world
stage. Suffice to say, you didn't think he was great in Toulon.
No, I didn't, no. But everyone deserves a second chance, and he's gone out to redeem himself, because he's made a few errors off the pitch, but that's no...
Remind everybody, if Australia win that pool, and obviously the Australia Wales game, Donal, is the pivotal game. Who do they get in the quarterfinals? What's their route like?
If Australia top the pool, they'll play second in Pool C, which would be France or Argentina.
Okay. So you could be,
I mean, if it was, I think Australia would fancy their chances there. But I think that Wales Australia game is going to be really interesting.
Mm.
Like, Wales couldn't beat Australia for love nor money for years, even though they were flying. They were the one bogey team. They found a way. I think in the last 12 months they had success. But you flip that on the other side, Australia will feel that every time they play Wales that they're capable of beating them.
It seems to me, lads, that the one thing, the common denominator in everything you're saying is timing, Raj, is actually getting your timing right for this World Cup. In terms of Ireland, certainly a couple of weeks ago, it looked like our timing was seriously and dangerously off. Is everything now back on track on the basis of one warm-up game at the Aviva Stadium?
Well, it's a lot more back on track than it was prior to Wales, because we were desperate. And I think what that performance shows is there's a good bit of bite about this Irish team. There's a bit of battle about this Irish team, because let's face it, that Friday before the Wales game, there was doom and gloom all over the country and weren't too sure. A lot of people were talking up Wales to come over and beat Ireland.
Mm.
But I think the Irish team would have got a huge confidence, not from the result, but from the performance. Donal talked about the Wales 8 up front, and I don't think they could handle Ireland's power game when Ireland got into the Wales 22. I think you saw after a number of phases that they were just like, they couldn't handle the likes of Furlong when he actually struck on the ball and got his timing well. And that James Ryan, for example, people like that, I think when they kind of get their nose through the defenders, we are a very different team. But if against England, we couldn't find that, because the ball was slowed down and a little half a second makes a massive difference. But we were winning collisions against Wales, which we weren't against England, not in Twickenham, but in the Aviva at the start of the Six Nations. So I think from a confidence point of view, or from kind of a jostling point of view, Ireland shaping up to Wales, Ireland would feel that they have the upper hand on them. I don't think they would be too worried about that. As opposed to Ireland against England, you'd have to say that England probably hold a mental advantage over Ireland at this current point.
We're hearing, Donal, this week, and obviously it will be confirmed quite shortly. I mean, obviously Robbie Henshaw is definitely out of Sunday, and Rob Kearney now looks like he's in trouble. A calf injury, as you both know, like, is not something that you can play through.
Donal wouldn't know much about that.
Are those kind of things that can knock you off?
Well, you see, you're looking at the Irish squad now. Joey Carberry hasn't played since that Italian match, back in the 4th of August, and, you know, he had a lot of injury in the second half of last season. Keith Earls has been struggling with an injury. We don't know just how fit he is. Robbie Henshaw, who I thought was superb in the game against Wales, not available for selection. Now you're talking about Rob Kearney. We only have 14 backs out there. You're going to start 7 and have 3 on the bench. So that means if all 4 of them are in trouble, it's the last 10 fellas standing before you've even played a game will be in the match day 23.
That's worrying.
That is worrying, and that's before we played a match. It is a concern. Like, for me, I just feel so sorry for Robbie Henshaw. He's a player I really admire. He's had a horrific run of injuries. I thought he was superb, as I say, against Wales. People have been writing off Rob Kearney for a long time, but you look at the difference he made to the Irish setup when he came back in against Wales. There was one time early on in the game when, you know, Wales forced a 2-on-2 off a scrum. Keith Earls was having to turn the ball, as chipped in behind. Kearney's positional sense and just rugby know-how at this stage of his career, he had covered 50 yards to save a certain try. Does Jordan Larmour have that if he fits in at 15? I don't think so. Personally, I just don't understand, and I put it back on Munster, how Andrew Conway wasn't played a fullback last year at any stage during the Pro 4. Well, not at all. He played once or twice, but I would have seen him as a contender for Ireland at fullback. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. As I say, right now we're not 100% sure where all these injuries are, but it's not an ideal position to be in. You're building up to a huge game, and all around your fellas are, you know, worried about key players.
Are you thinking the same? Are you, if you're coaching that, and as I said, you're down to 10 backs, are you beginning to see, you know, a kind of a fraught sense around the place, like of concern and worry, which we thought we'd got rid of by beating Wales?
Yeah, I suppose I flip it on its head and I wonder sometimes why we wouldn't copy the Southern Hemisphere model of kind of playing all the way through. You look at Dawn's point, so you're going to have some key players that will have 60 minutes before the biggest game of their lives, essentially, in four years.
Mm.
So we were always fed the information that it takes you kind of 4 or 5 games to find your rhythm in a season, at least.
Yeah.
But I don't see that model being applied here. So
but
you kind of question
to be fair, a lot of that goes back to the timing of the World Cup itself. And this is an argument I've had for years. I remember having an argument with Joe Schmidt about it after the 2015 World Cup. There's no doubt in my mind that the Southern Hemisphere teams, because the World Cup is on in September, are far more battle-hard, pardoned. The Rugby Championship is way more competitive than the warm-up games that we've seen up here. You're like a student cramming for an exam. You don't play a match since last May. Of course, your training and massive physical endurance work has been done, but it's not the same.
No.
And the games that you play, the warm-up games, there is no way even you can replicate in those that what you're going to have in the World Cup. And that is always a concern for me. No, I think Scotland are in the same boat as we are. But there is no doubt that that is an advantage or a disadvantage that the Northern Hemisphere teams always carry into the tournament.
Yeah, it is an interesting point, you know, because it's... Even if you're playing club games, you know, so like the New Zealand players with all of its successful campaigns with the Crusaders or with Super Rugby, then they have a little bit of time off and then they're into the Four Nations Championship with it, then Rugby World Cup warm-ups.
But even the mentality, Raj, last weekend of... A doubt emerges about Robbie Henshaw. Will Allison, who's played 50 minutes of rugby, I think, since last January, was set to start for Ulster against Glasgow in a friendly, and he was pulled out of the game because there was a doubt about Robbie Henshaw. Surely, by God, they'd be far better off allowing him play the match so that he gets another game under his belt.
But the flip side of that, then, is that surely, be to God, he goes out and he gets injured, and you go, what kind of process is that? You know, I get it, but both ways you're kind of goosed, aren't you?
Has Finn Russell, Raj, been playing, like, in other words, given the fact that he's at Racing, has he been playing in this top 14 season? Has he had competitive games that will give him some kind of an advantage on Sunday?
No, I don't think so. I wouldn't.
No, he'd have been with the Scotland. Like, when you're released for the whole summer, you're not part of the any domestic competition. So he would have been with Scotland since last June.
Yeah.
So he's been party.
But he is, I mean, Raj, you'd know him, obviously. I don't know where you were involved in signing him at Racing, but he is one of those mercurial talents where you're never 100% sure what you're going to get, but if you get hot Russell,
yeah,
it's a problem.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And I think, from his point of view, I don't think he's too sure either, which is kind of refreshing in this day and age. He kind of plays with a smile on his face and he has a go. And probably helped them meet Zeebo and Paris too, because they've struck off a good relationship with each other and they play ad lib. There aren't many people like that playing the game, especially at that level. But you saw his pass against England, I don't know, was it a season or two ago, when he just ripped it. And the downside of that is that they got caught against France within 4 minutes and Pinot intercepted him in the World Cup warm-up. So, yeah, I think Scotland, with Finn Russell at 9 out of 10 performance, have a big chance. But the other flip side of that, if you pressurise him, he can hit a 4.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Johnny on a bad day will have a 7.
First weekend, there's no point, lads, just to finish trying to throw ye forward to November 2nd. So let's just keep it at this weekend. I'm presuming I don't need to ask you, because you're both going to say that Ireland will beat Scotland. But I'm more intrigued almost that... Are you both saying, or am I reading you incorrectly, that you think South Africa will beat New Zealand?
I wouldn't say will. I think you look at the last 3 games they've played, points differential is 1 in New Zealand's favour. They've had 2, a win each and a draw. 1 by 2 points, 1 by 1 point, and a draw in Wellington. So that's how thin the gap has been there. I'd have to wait and see what the team is first. I mean, because of the issues that Raj has alluded to with the composition of their back line, I mean, do they put Barrett at back at 10? Do they bring Ryan Crotty back into midfield? Do they put Ben Smith? That's sort of going back to what the tried and trusted that they had before. So I'd still fancy New Zealand to win that game, but it's difficult to say without seeing the teams and the conditions. I know, for example, on Sunday, they're talking about thunderstorms and lashing rain for the Ireland game. So, it could be similar on Saturday. That changes the dynamic then because of the physicality that South Africa bring, the line speed that we've spoken about, and the fact that their halfbacks are both, their kicking game is superb. Mm-hmm. So I think those type of conditions might suit South Africa better.
I noticed, Rog, Warren Gatland has Wales training with a slippy ball deliberately for those kind of, for those kind of conditions. So in terms of that New Zealand South Africa game, are we talking about, uncontrollables like that deciding the game, or have you got a pretty definitive view on which way it'll go?
I think New Zealand will beat South Africa this weekend. I just think they will. And the interesting one for me is the Ireland-Scotland game, depending on the next couple of hours what we hear in terms of team selection. I think Scotland will be excited by a back three of Stockdale, Larmour and...
probably Andrew Conway.
Andrew Conway, yeah. I think.
You mean excited as in they'll see vulnerability in
yes,
front of them?
Yes, I think they will, yeah, because it's... my gut are... I'm hearing rumours that they may start Conway at 15 ahead of Larmour, which a few months ago you probably would have said that it might have been the other way.
Well, I would definitely pick it that way on the basis of... I just don't think Larmour looks comfortable at fullback. He started there in autumn of last year against Argentina. Positionally, he looked out of sorts, wasn't convincing under the high ball. Again, he was. He played one of the. I think against Italy, he played full back there, and I thought he just like a guy. He looked that day like somebody who didn't want to make mistakes. Whereas every time he caught the ball, whether by instruction or not, he just kicked it 50 yards.
But then the other side of it too was his game in Chicago against Italy. Remember?
Yeah.
We haven't rarely seen a performance like that from any back.
That was Italy B stroke C.
I get you, but even in terms of what he could do on his own. Yeah. But you haven't seen much against him, obviously. Yeah, but you
haven't seen him doing that on the wing either.
You haven't, exactly. I just think that Conway, in fairness to him, is a battler and he's brave. I'm not saying that Larmour isn't, but like there's question marks probably around Stockdale's defending. The people are saying he was harsh on him against England, but the inside didn't do him any favours, but he himself didn't do himself any favours either. So there's two sides to that story. It wasn't all... Sure, he had nothing to do because he couldn't do anything because there was poor decisions on his inside. Yes, there was, but he still has to think on his own 2 feet.
And that's why having a fellow like Rob Kearney at full back, who's literally coaching him as he's going along, he's shouting and roaring, telling him where to stand, telling him where to go. Is Jordan Larmour going to do that? Is Andrew Conway going to do that? No, I don't think they are. And that is why Rob Kearney, with all the people trying to get rid of him for years, that is why he brings so much to this team.
Yeah, and also the fact that if there's a line break, all his teammates know that this guy will be chopped down. If that's a line break against Scotland, his teammates know that Stuart Hogg probably won't make the tackle. That's the difference between the two of them. Stuart Hogg would run rings around Kearney going forward, but you win World Cups on your defence. So people forget about that it's defence wins championships, defence wins World Cups. So it is an important aspect of the game.
The Irish Examiner Rugby World Cup podcast with the Nissan Leaf, the world's best-selling electric vehicle. Book a test drive today at nissan.ie. Nissan, innovation that excites.